This is HPR episode 2282 entitled, Pathfinder Adventure Card Game, and is part of the series, Tabletop Gaming. It is hosted by Klaatu, and is about 41 minutes long, and carries a clean flag. The summary is, Klaatu talks about the Pathfinder RPG franchise, the OGL license, and the Adventure Card Game.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by AnHonestHost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hi everyone, this is Klaatu and this is Hacker Public Radio. One more entry. By one more, I don't mean the final by any means, I'm just saying. This is one more entry into my gaming, my tabletop gaming series. So previously, I've been talking about, most recently, I've been talking about game books. And I've got a lot more game books, but I haven't actually played them yet. And I don't want to just kind of do an episode about the concept of game books, so I'm going to take a break from my game book sub-series and move into a related area, I guess, the world of Pathfinder. And this isn't going to be just about the world of Pathfinder, it's actually specifically about the card game, Pathfinder Card. I think there's a big, long, official name that I should be using, like the Pathfinder Adventure Card Game or something like that. But either way, The starting point is this thing called Pathfinder. So there's a thing about Dungeons and Dragons that I touched on in my previous episode about Tunnels and Trolls and Dungeon Delvers. And the thing is that around the turn of the century, maybe, thereabouts, the Wizards of the Coast, which is a company that owns some pretty major titles, they developed and own Dungeons and Dragons, and they owned and developed Magic the Gathering. So it's kind of like if you really think of sort of the prototypical and stereotypical geeky, kind of like nerdy, dorky games, you know, the tabletop stuff, like those are two of the big ones, you know, like Dungeons and Dragons and Magic the Gathering are two of the classics, right? So for whatever reason, I mean, this is a huge company, so for whatever reason, back in about 2000 or so, they came up with this idea that the game system, I guess, like the rules that comprise of how you play the game should be sort of owned by both the creator and the audience, the community. And they came out with this thing called the Open Game License, or the OGL. They had a little bit of a crisis of faith during the fourth edition of Dungeons & Dragons, where they came up with this new license that wasn't quite as generous and kind of locked a lot of things down. But as of the fifth edition, which was released beginning of 2016 of Dungeons & Dragons, they went back to the OGL, so they got back on the wagon, or off the wagon, whatever that expression is. So the Open Gaming license, kind of, I mean, you know, it kind of formalized what was already kind of a thing among tabletop gamers, which is that when you've got a game in your possession, in the privacy of your own home, guess what? You can change things. Not really that big of a deal. And you can even add to the game, and you can make your own copy of the game, because no one's going to burst into your house and tell you that making a a Xerox copy, and yes, I'm misusing that deliberately just to annoy people, is fine. You can do that. So the OGL kind of formalized the idea that, yes, you can do that. And more importantly, I think it formalized the and sort of made it official that other companies and other creative entrepreneurial people could come up with add-on content for Dungeons and Dragons. You know, like you can come up with a book or whatever that is set in the Dungeons and Dragons rule system. Now, you cannot set it in the world of Dungeons and Dragons, you know, like all the different trademarked terms, like the Forgotten Realms and the Sword Coast, that sort of thing. You can't use those. Those are trademarked. But in terms of like the actual way that you play, all of that is up for grabs. Which is convenient for them, because in order to know how to play a role-playing game, you have to purchase the rulebook, and that's the thing that Dungeons & Dragons is. So if you're a third party and you're releasing a book of adventures or something, or an alternate world, and you say this book is for use with the Dungeons and Dragons rule set or rule system or D&D system, whatever you call it, then people could purchase your book, and then in order to actually play it, they would want to go and purchase the D&D rule book or the player guide or something to give them some idea of how to do this. So it's what's good for the goose is good for the gander type of thing. And anyway, all of that was just kind of me raving about how great Creative Common open source type licenses are, copyleft stuff is. But around edition, I think it was either version 3 or I want to say 3.5, which I might have just made that up, but around then in the Dungeon and Dragon universe or world, someone took them up on this offer of okay, you're an open game license, let's fork Dungeons and Dragons, and someone did that, and that became a thing called Pathfinder. So Pathfinder pretty much started just as that. It was a fork, and you could probably say an alternative to or whatever of Dungeons and Dragons. So the initial versions, I mean, I haven't read them, not the initial versions, but the initial versions, from what I understand, were Dungeons and Dragons with adjustments here and there being made to account for different things or to simplify certain areas. You know, it was just it's what any fork is, right? It's like the same thing but different. And since then, the company that created Pathfinder, which is called Paizo, P-A-I-Z-O, and you can find their site, by the way, at paizo.com. Since then, the company has really kind of developed Pathfinder into its own, I don't want to say this, but essentially an intellectual property, you know, and it's kind of similar to what Dungeons and Dragons did with Forgotten Realms, where you kind of, even if you weren't playing Dungeons and Dragons, you probably, if you are at all associated with either certainly gaming at all, or fantasy, like fantasy literature, then you there's a high likelihood that you'd heard of like the Forgotten Realms. Like that's not, you know, if you know R.A. Salvatore at all, then you know that he wrote a bunch of books in the Forgotten Realm setting. If you know computer games, then you'll know that games like Baldur's Gate and Neverwinter Nights and what's that other one? The other one. You know, those all kind of either use D&D rules or whatever. So it was very, you kind of had a sense of like this entity. And Pathfinder has done a similar thing with their system. Like the system itself is just a system, and you can go buy the book or the set of books, and you can look at them, and you can have all the different stats that are available to characters. You can understand what's supposed to happen in a combat scenario, how you calculate different things, all that stuff, that's in the book. But they, throughout all of these books, they kind of use these common characters, like this common core set of characters. Oh my gosh, Icewind Dale, that was the other one. Baldur's Gate, Neverwinter, and Icewind Dale, Forgotten Realms. Anyway, Pathfinder, common set of characters. There's Valeros, like sort of the fighter, warrior type. Sione, the sorceress with crazy-looking tattoos. Harsk, the ranger, dwarf guy. Yes, a dwarf ranger, believe it or not. Sort of, yeah, so they've got like this sort of cast of characters who kind of keep popping up during all the different, within all the different rule books. And as I learned later through a Humble Bundle purchase, there's a whole bunch of comics from, I think, Dynamic is the name of the comic company. Bunch of comic books with all these, with that core set of characters running around and having Pathfinder Chronicle adventures. And they're actually quite good. You should check them out if you're at all interested. Although now that the Humble Bundle's over, it's kind of harder to do that. But they are quite good. So Paizo started kind of developing their own, I don't want to really say lore, because that's kind of like the history of it, right? So it's more of like a cast of characters, really. A sort of story that you could follow actively within the Pathfinder universe. And it's I would say it was very similar to Dungeons and Dragons in spirit. You know, it's very much in the same vein. It's if you listened to my previous episode about Tunnels and Trolls, like one of the things that appealed to me about Tunnels and Trolls was that it was very whimsical and silly and down and out. All the characters were losers, and there was a very sort of sense of sarcastic flavor to Tunnels and Trolls, and kind of self-aware and kind of funny. Whereas Pathfinder is not like that. It didn't fork D&D to go in a completely different direction. It's very much, very, very much a parallel kind of story. So all of this has been really kind of to introduce you to the concept of Pathfinder and what it is. That's what it is. It has several rule books, so if you are into traditional RPGs and have people who want to play a traditional RPG, then you can absolutely purchase. And again, there was a Humble Bundle where like all of these rule books in PDF form were available for, I think I paid $15 American dollars for just like a whole catalog of rule books and comics and associated maps and things like that. But unfortunately that is over now. But it is a thing, and you can buy it online. Again, you can go to paizo.com or you can go to drivethroughrpg.com and pick up a couple of different rule books so that you can start building characters and play through some games. And they're quite prolific, like Paizo are. They've got an initiative called the Pathfinder Society, where you can go out and kind of basically just go to your local gaming store. They may have Pathfinder Society events running. It usually happens, you know, once every 2 weeks or whatever. And you just kind of show up and play. And the idea is that they're drop-in, drop-out. Well, drop-in, drop-out. You know, you can just go to one game, you can go to several games across over the course of a couple of weeks. You know, they're basically cutscenes. You know, they're kind of like, here's an adventure with this cast of character, this new cast of characters. There's no continuity across the story, so that's kind of the idea to enable sort of flash mob RPG, I guess, if you want to use a cliche term. So that's what Pathfinder is, and it's all open game licensed. So it is very much in the spirit of, you know, the GPL. Like what became OGL stays OGL. So Pathfinder itself is open game license, which is a great reason, I think, to support it. But then again, so is D&D. So you could just as easily support that. Either way, it's a cool universe to hang around in as an RPG player, and it's worth checking out. But if you don't have... Oh, and by the way, they have a... I forgot to mention this. They have a great Pathfinder RPG beginner box. So if you're completely new to RPG, that's a great place to start. I mean, like, my first real live tabletop RPG where I knew what I was doing, my very first was Dungeons & Dragons back a long time ago, but in the modern day, like, you know, where I was actually thinking about it, was Shadowrun, and that was not very friendly to get started with at all. That's got a pretty high learning curve. Whereas Pathfinder, they've got this beginner box, well worth the purchase. It is fantastic. It introduces you to RPG. It introduces you to Pathfinder. It's really, really well done. I strongly recommend it. Okay. Anyway, the thing that I actually want to talk about in this episode is the Pathfinder Adventure card game. And this I got sort of on just a whim. It was being resold by someone who had done art for the card game, like had actually done the illustrations. So he was selling it cheap because he'd gotten it as sort of part of his payment for the job. You know, sometimes when you work on something, they'll send you a copy of the thing. I mean, ideally they would always do that, but they don't always. But that is frequently, in theory, like a benefit. You know, oh, you worked on this movie. Here's a copy of that movie. Or you worked on this card game. Here's a copy of that card game. That sort of thing. So, I got it for pretty cheap, and I was surprised when I got it because it was huge. It was the box itself was the size easily of well, I guess let's say like two or three pizzas stacked on top of each other of pizza boxes. I mean, it's a really big box, and I thought it was just a card game. So I'm thinking, okay, I'm gonna open this thing up, and there's gonna be like a big board sort of, you know, it's gonna be like a board game or something where you also use cards or something. You know, I kind of started inventing all this. What to expect, and finally I opened the box, and it was practically empty. Stay with me, it's not as bad as it sounds. So the idea of the box that you buy is that it does have something like 500 cards or something. It's an insane number of cards. And it also has a bunch of empty slots so that you can purchase more cards and then add it to the box. That sounds pretty gimmicky, and I guess it is, but it's actually kind of cool. So stick with me and see what you think of it. Well, you might not ever know what to think of it, because unless you play it, it might not make any sense to you. But anyway, stick with me. So we've got 500 cards in this box, and the box that I purchased was Rise of the Rune Lords. And there's a couple of different sets. So there's Rise of the Rune Lords, the box, and then there are the add-on decks that you can purchase in addition to that, right? So those are just tiny little boxes, you know, the size of a cell phone box, you know, just a normal size card box of two decks each. So it's probably 104 or so cards in each add-on box. So those are the add-on box for that. And if you get Rise of the Rune Lords, then you would want to then purchase Rise of the Rune Lords add-on cards, because that would be compatible with your Rise of the Rune Lords box. There's also a different box, and that would be the Skull and Shackles box, which, as you might guess, has a piratey theme. And then you could buy add-ons for that one. There's Wrath of the Righteous, Mummy's Mask, and I think that's it. Right, so far. I don't know if they plan on more or not. So the way that it works is that you get you get the box, and it's a bunch of cards and a rule book that's not too big, but I will admit that it took me two or three times to understand everything. It was definitely it wasn't a quick read, and it wasn't a super easy read. There's a lot of terminology throughout the book. But me and my girlfriend played it a couple of times, and in the end, we eventually sort of got the hang of it. So it's like a lot of other games where, yeah, you have to play it a couple of times before you become sort of an expert on it. But it's really clever. It's a really clever game. So the way that it works is that it comes with an adventure card, I think, is what they call it. And it's kind of like the singular card, which essentially has your overarching story arc on it. So it kind of details, so you're going to go on this adventure, which is the Rise of the Rune Lords, I think. And in this adventure, there are several scenarios. And so each scenario has its own card. And on each scenario card, it has a set of locations and a list of a cast of characters. So on the scenario card, you might have, for instance, the abandoned farmhouse, the village, and the docks. I'm vaguely making this up because I don't exactly remember what all of them were, but let's just say that those were the three things. And so you've got these cards, and it will detail for you how many enemies are in each location, and which main villain, which big bad goes with that scenario. So you've kind of got a, if you think about how you might set this up on a card table so far, you've got kind of a pyramid structure. You've got your main adventure card at the top, which technically you don't need because it's not, you only get one in the box, but let's just put that up at the top anyway for logic. And then from there you have your scenario that you're playing. And then from that scenario, you've got your locations, which are about, two or three locations. And then under each location, you'll now have a deck representing the items or objects in that location, in that physical location. And that's when you start kind of building up the different decks on the table. So each location has not only some number of enemy, like bad guys, like bandits or whatever, but it also has somewhere in there your main villain who you're actually up against and you're looking for. And then each location tells you how many other things to put. For instance, some number of traps, some number of random items, some number of blockades, like different kinds of cards. And that's why you've got like literally 500 cards, because you've got decks and decks and decks of various different kinds of cards. You've got weapons, you've got items, you've got armor, you've got NPCs, you've got bandits and monsters and villains and treasure and, just all kinds of things. And so you're stacking, you're creating like these little sub-decks with a couple of cards from here, a couple of cards from there, as detailed by your scenario card, until you come up with like this little sub-deck for each location. So now you've got three sub-decks under each one sub-deck under each location, which are three, leading up to your main scenario that you're playing through that time. And that's kind of your main setup right there. That's your board, as it were. That's kind of how it all works. Now you shuffle those up, obviously, so you don't actually know where anything is among these cards, but statistically you kind of know what you're in for on each location. You don't have to, but since you're the one who's doing this, you kind of do. You know that, okay, I got like five bandits over here at the docks, and I remember that I put two traps in there and two treasures and one NPC. So, okay. And over here in the village, I've only got one trap, but like five bandits and some treasure. And then over here, I've got something else. And somewhere in one of those decks, and we don't know where, there's the main villain. There's like the big bad. So the object of the game then is to systematically find your main villain. And the way that you do that is you select a character from the cards, from the card deck, from the hero deck, and you've got different characters, and they're they correspond with the different story elements that Paizo has developed for Pathfinder. So, you know, you might have Valeros to play, and you might have Lem, the bard, to play, and you might have, you know, whatever, Harsk, the ranger, Sione, the sorceress, whatever. So you've got all these characters to choose from. You pick whichever one you want, and of course, they each have their different levels of abilities and special talents and things like that. And once you've chosen your character, you place your character at some location, wherever you want to be, and then you explore. Now, before you start exploring, you have to collect gear and armor and stuff. So you once again, you kind of, the card that you chose, the character card that you chose, tells you how many cards to choose from the, you know, the good stack. And so you've got like this kind of a card hand that you've got full of I think you have like 15 cards or something like that, but they're not all in your hand. So you've got like this mini draw deck for yourself, and kind of a stash where you can store what you actually are using. And you're rotating cards out a lot, and there's a lot of different mechanics, and this is kind of where the rule set starts to get really complex and needs like one or two read throughs to fully comprehend. But it's really nice. And I'll get to it in a minute. But so the actual gameplay is just you kind of exploring each location. So you go to a location, and you draw a card, predictably, and you can, you know, and now you've encountered something. So you, if it's a bad guy, then you have to go into combat. If it's a non-playable character, you can try to recruit them. But in order to recruit them, you have to be appealing to them in some way. And there's usually a couple of different ways to appeal to them. Like you can use your wisdom rating. If they like wisdom, then you could use your wisdom rating and roll some die against your wisdom. And if you beat a certain number, then you've recruited them successfully. And if you fail, then you put them back into the big box and they go away. They don't join your party. If they join your party, then you get to add them to your hand, and you can call upon them whenever you need them for whatever it might be. Usually, it's combat. If it's an item that you find, then you can try to take that item. But in order to take the item, you have to have some kind of attribute that allows you to take that item. Whether it's, you know, strength. Maybe if you find a warhammer, you're going to need strength to be able to wield that. So you'll have to roll a die against your strength rating. And if you're just if you chose a sorcerer or a wizard or something, then your strength roll might not be so great. But maybe you do get it, and then maybe you don't even use it. Maybe you trade it with your other player, and they get to use it because they chose the warrior character. So there's a really healthy amount, like. The game mechanic, as you can tell, is just a bunch of encounters, and I think that is a major weakness in a lot of the kind of RPG-ish card games, this and Dungeoneer included. It's kind of, you've got zero story, essentially. And with Pathfinder, you at least, especially if you've been following the Pathfinder universe, and I think that helps if you do, then at least you kind of have a notion of story, because you know these characters, and you're as you play, there's some empathy going on. You know, it's kind of like, oh, cool, Valeros just finally encountered this bandit, and he totally killed him, like split him in half, just right down the middle. It's great. Was that too explicit? Was that graphic? I don't know. It's all imaginary. It's not really happening. So you kind of have like this connection to that character, whereas if you're not following Pathfinder, sort of the fictional Pathfinder universe, then there's not really that connection. And by the same token, like if you're playing Dungeoneer, which, by the way, I reviewed several episodes ago, that's why I'm kind of referencing it now as if though you know what that is. There's really no connection to any character, because there's no lore there at all. There's no backstory. There's no hint of, you know, it's really just flavor text on the card. So I think in solo gaming in general, even though Pathfinder card game is not necessarily solo, it you can play it with up to like 4 or 6 people, I think. And I've only ever played it. No, that's not true. I've played it solo, but I've played it with 2 people generally. And I think with those kinds of small scale games that kind of want to appeal to the RPG crowd, I feel like there's this kind of awkward, unavoidable lack of story. You know, it's like, hey, come RPG, except you don't have to have a group of people. And so you hear that and you're like, okay, cool, I'm going to get lots of great storytelling here. And a lot of them don't have any story at all. Which you know, is, I don't know what you do with that, because even if you included a book of story stuff to read as you play or something, I mean, that expires really fast. You know, I've read this before, I don't care anymore. So it doesn't really work, you know? So I think in terms of sort of really capturing that RPG experience with a card game, there's a sort of an unwritten expectation that you invest in the expanded universe of the game, you know? Like, you can't just play the game. You have to get into the story going on in that world, even though you might not be playing. You may be, but you might not be playing one of the main characters. But you know of these characters, and characters that you do recognize kind of pop up here and there. So it's something that you would have to do, I think, really for yourself. If you felt like the story was lacking, you would have to invest your effort into digging deeper into Pathfinder universe. Now that doesn't really matter, because maybe you didn't come here for the story. Maybe you just wanted a good card game, and a good card game it is. There are, like I say, there are lots of rules that sort of slipped by me and my girlfriend the first time we played, and certainly the first time I played as solo. They completely escaped me, and we ended up kind of playing a lot longer than we were supposed to, and it started to feel very grindy. You know, it was just like, oh my gosh, we have so many cards to get through, and we completely missed some of the rules that sort of said, hey, if you do this thing, then you don't have to do any of these anymore because you've done this thing. So we would have gotten through it a lot faster. And why that matters is, number one, because, yeah, it does start to feel a little bit grindy. It's like you're just encountering and encountering and encountering, and there's just so much encountering you can do before you just... It's no longer fun. It's just a numbers game. So you want to avoid that, but there's also a timer mechanic. So you've got a stack of, I think, 30 cards, which they just use 30 cards, and at first I thought there was some significance to them. It's literally just a timer, except in like one edge case where you can draw a certain card, and it's like, if this thing is in effect, then something else happens, and that's the only time that ever matters. But generally speaking, it's just a deck that you flip. So at the end of your turn, you flip a card, and if you run out of those 30 cards up in the corner, if you flip them all over, then the game is over, and the villain has eluded you. So there is an enforced, like, this isn't going to become too grindy because you only have 30 turns. That's it. That's all. Which becomes, I mean, that's, you know, that's pressure, and that's good. It's nice. And the way that, the other way that they avoid it becoming too much of a grind is that there are certain achievements that you can do that force the villain sort of, that prevent the villain from running. So what happens is when you secure a location, then the villain can no longer escape to that location. So we were never securing any location when we first played, and that meant that the villain, every time we would counter the villain, he would just run to a different location as part of the mechanic of the game. And we thought, this is really getting silly, you know? And we never realized that we could have closed the location a lot earlier than when we did. So there are a couple of things where you can, yeah, secure a location, and then the rest of those cards just don't matter anymore. You've successfully scared all the villainy out of that location, and it's a secure place now. So that's one thing. And that helps. That makes the game go a little bit faster. And the strength of the game, I think, would be, and my girlfriend felt this way as well, it really, really feels it feels like a video game, which almost seems like an insult to a tabletop game, you know? It's like, oh, you have emulated a fancy video game quite well, and you just did that with a deck of cards. Good on you. It's not like that. It just happens to be, yeah, very much like a video game, you know? Kind of, it feels, or I guess in a way, like an RPG, where you've leveled up sufficiently to have gained a fair amount of power. Because the hand of, the deck of cards that you are handed, you know, for your character, they consist of all your different weapons and armor and abilities that are appropriate for that character. The card tells you what to get, but you can choose your own. As long as you have skill in an area, you can choose a weapon that suits. So you might have, you know, like a broadsword and a war hammer and a war axe and, you know, whatever else. And these cards you're able to play during combat. And as long as you and another player are in the same location, you can actually swap cards during combat as well, so that if they have a shield that you could use, they can give you that. And so it feels very much kind of like, you know, it's kind of that Baldur's Gate feel, where you're selecting like all of these abilities to use during a combat, and then you're letting the combat go and see what happens. It's a lot of fun. It's very much, you know, those cards are like little icons on the screen, and you just kind of invoke them, and then you roll the die with all your little power-ups and stuff, and see what happens. And it's cool because, you know, if you're sufficiently shielded and you've got sufficient weaponry on your side, the outcome will change drastically. And as you level your character up, you get more die to roll so that you become more powerful. So the mechanics of the combat and managing resources, that sort of stuff, is very much like an RPG, either real life RPG or a video game version of RPG. It feels exactly like that. The only place that it sort of doesn't feel like that is that the story is just that you're hunting one person down and encounter through a series of 30 encounters, essentially. That's the weakest point of the game. But if you're a card geek and you really enjoy the card mechanic, and you love looking at cool art, and you know, you kind of just marvel at sort of like this world that's being built through these little glimpses that are on cards, then this is really, really nice. It's really, really cool. Like I say, I got it for a little bit cheaper than it should have been, and I'm looking at Paizo.com right now on my screen, and it's $60 for the main card set. That's the Rune Lord base set. And then, yeah, like I say, the add-on adventure decks, you know, once you finish your adventure, the adventure card, you could then add more stuff onto it. And those are going to run, like, you know, probably $20 or $30, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, $20. So it's a lot of fun. It's a really great design. I would say, you know, if you're thinking about like a dungeon crawly type of card game, I would say that this is definitely a much better design, honestly, than for instance Dungeoneer, which I recently just rewrote the whole rule set of Dungeoneer. I just completely rewrote, and it's a lot better now, I think, but yeah, and it was partly because of this Pathfinder card game. I started seeing the weaknesses of the Dungeoneer card game. I just kind of realized that there was too much going on in Dungeoneer. And so I kind of adapted it and stole some ideas from Pathfinder adventure card game. So I'm highly recommending this, but I'm recommending it not as an RPG. I'm recommending it as a dungeon crawler, really. And it's really beautifully done. The world that it is set in is fantastic. So if you enjoy fantasy, then I recommend even sort of getting into the Pathfinder world in general. There's comics and there's a couple of books as well, a couple of novels. Not as many, you know, nowhere near as many as Forgotten Realms has. And in fact, Forgotten Realms obviously has a lot more just by way of, I mean, it's got video games and other stuff. So yeah, this wouldn't be as rich as that in terms of expanded universe stuff, but it is there. They are developing it, so you've got plenty to work with. That's Pathfinder Adventure Card Game.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.